Sì, va bene. Grazie Maurizio Fallaci per questo, dire, carotaggio anche su un mondo fondamentale come il mondo degli archivi e le loro complessità. Ecco, mi vengono in mente anche qua due commenti. Il mio ruolo è un po', non dico di stimolatore, ma di provare a leggere un po' nelle pieghe. Ecco, per esempio, sempre per tornare al digitale, questa grande opportunità che oggi noi stiamo utilizzando, il digitale ha aperto un grande paradosso, nel senso che oggi è una tecnologia che permette apparentemente di dare vita immortale ai documenti storici, e come forse chi si occupa di queste cose sa, uno dei grandi problemi è che non riusciamo a documentare l'attuale. Cioè, una parte rilevante della comunicazione culturale e politica oggi avviene sulla rete o coi telefonini cellulari, e non esiste un processo strutturato che tenga traccia di questi documenti. Quindi è come se una parte rilevante dell'era moderna non sia documentabile. E questo certamente fa parte di uno dei tanti paradossi, come dire, e sappiamo quanto, voglio dire, chi si occupa di storia sa quanto le lettere, i meccanismi, cioè quanto la storia anche delle civiltà è legata su documenti laterali, su meccanismi non ufficiali. Ecco, oggi la dimensione ufficiale si chiama internet e si chiama telefonia mobile, e al di là di qualche elemento di colore sulle intercettazioni telefoniche che ogni tanto accade, ma tenere le intercettazioni, anche quello è molto costoso, sostanzialmente un pezzo della nostra vita attuale non verrà mai registrato. E questo penso che sia una cosa che debba far riflettere, no? Da una parte ci scateniamo, buttiamo tutte le nostre energie per conservare documenti certamente molto importanti, ma magari minori, che appartengono a qualche centinaia di anni fa, e, come dire, l'energia per misurare quello che accade oggi delle volte è molto limitata. E questa è una riflessione che io penso debba essere tenuta presente a chi si occupa di storia, quindi di registrazione degli elementi che portano a far sì che la civiltà vada in un senso o nell'altro. Beh, c'è un'altra riflessione che viene spontanea, adesso gioco un po' con le parole, appunto prima si parlava di anarchia informatica, come giustamente come un grande problema, è un grande problema. Anche qua, paradossalmente, se noi andiamo nell'etimologia di anarchia, anarchè, quindi mancanza di una testa, sostanzialmente internet nasce in quanto non ha testa. E uno degli elementi più importanti del modello internet, che ha creato una diffusione globale, è che non c'era un capo, non c'era un governo, non c'era una testa, intendo una struttura che comanda e gerarchizza. Quindi la caratteristica fondamentale del modello internet oggi è che non esiste una testa, non esiste un archè, non esiste un luogo che comanda la rete, che stabilisce le strategie, che stabilisce i protocolli. Tanto è vero che alcuni hanno anche osservato che internet sarebbe crollata a un certo punto, mancando, come dire, un vertice che ne stabiliva e ne pianificava le crescite. Questo chiaramente non per dire che sia brutta l'anarchia informatica, quanto, come dire, effettivamente il mondo digitale apre degli aspetti anche paradossali. Utilizzare con sapienza le tecnologie digitali richiede una profonda conoscenza del mezzo. Il mezzo è complesso e il mezzo non è traducibile solo in bits, in potenze, in prestazioni. È un fenomeno, è una tecnologia socioculturale che tocca le organizzazioni, le menti, gli uomini. La tecnologia, come sapete, modifica l'uomo. Cito un'altra riflessione che mi sembra interessante. Se uno si rilegge o ricorda il Teeto, quando Platone metteva in bocca di Socrate questa affermazione, osservando l'affermarsi della cultura scritta rispetto a quella orale, come sapete, Socrate manifestava una perplessità, no? Dicendo: ma adesso che la cultura non verrà più dal di dentro, no? Cultura orale, dove quindi la cultura, la conoscenza era parte di me, io l'avevo imparata a memoria, era parte di me stesso, ma verrà dal di fuori, no? Artificialmente da un libro, e tutti potranno utilizzarla. Ecco, se voi rileggete questa preoccupazione che chi assisteva alla cultura, all'affermazione della cultura scritta c'era rispetto a quello orale, vediamo che oggi la stessa preoccupazione è legata al digitale, no? La gente non legge più, la gente guarda troppo la televisione. Ecco, non credo che siano confrontabili, però ecco, questo per dire che tra l'altro ogni ondata di nuova tecnologia crea molte paure, e molto spesso poi le paure devono essere in qualche modo ricontestualizzate. Io mi sono trovato qualche tempo fa a leggere di qualche libro dell'Ottocento dove i ragazzi che leggevano troppo erano considerati con timore, cioè la gente che leggeva era considerata sballata, ho letto anche un testo clinico che in qualche modo associava, scusate la prosaicità, il lettore, il ragazzino che leggeva i libri a colui che si masturbava, perché la cultura era pratica, era agricola, il mestiere era lavorare nei campi, chi leggeva la notte sotto le coperte e gli venivano le occhiaie perché leggeva con le luci freddi era considerata una persona malata. Ecco, queste cose ci possono far sorridere oggi, ma ci obbligano a riflettere che ogni nuova tecnologia comporta dei cambiamenti anche culturali che spesso non sono compresi. creano paura perché uno, come dire, si abitua alle riflessioni precedenti. Ecco, questo, come dire, un po' in sintesi, una riflessione che dice che sul digitale ci sono straordinarie possibilità oggi, già le stiamo vivendo, le stiamo vedendo. L'applicazione di queste tecnologie al patrimonio culturale veramente apre spazi fino a poco tempo fa inconcepibili, però dobbiamo, e lo ribadisco, avere contezza dei lati articolati e complessi. La tecnologia interagisce con l'uomo, con la società e quindi la interazione è bionivoca. Dobbiamo studiare anche gli impatti che la tecnologia ha sull'uomo e sulla cultura. Ecco, a questo punto darei la parola a Patricia Manson, Digital Information Society della Commissione Europea, che probabilmente vorrà anche dare una specie di integrazione un po' delle cose, visto la sua finestra di osservazione, ci permetterà di dare una visione un po' integrata del dibattito che abbiamo avuto questo pomeriggio.
Thank you. I apologize. I was just waiting for the translation to catch up with your original language. As you heard, my name is Patricia Manson, and I work in as head of one of the research units in DG Information Society and Media. First of all, I'd like to thank the Ministry for inviting us to take part in this conference, and also to express my thanks to the organising committee for actually having put together a programme that has given rise to a wide range of issues that have been very diverse. It's clear that this is a very complicated area. We've heard, I think, also a lot of problems being stated, technical problems, technology challenges, societal issues that affect individuals, that affect organisations. I'm in part comforted by the fact that these are at the preoccupations of our research agenda, and I hope that in future we will be able to give the stakeholders the opportunity to work with them. I also particularly appreciated, I think, the initiative, the priority given in Italy to the use of IT in partnership with cultural heritage. I think this is a very welcome recognition of the potential of the partnership between the two areas, taking them much further than we've taken them so far. I am aware that we have 10 minutes, and I don't want to raise all the issues or talk about everything that we've been doing, but rather to come back to the core preoccupation of the European Digital Library and our strategy towards it. I think I'd like to begin with just repeating what our Digital Library vision is, and also start by saying that the European Digital Library is not a library. A digital library for us is some kind of managed collection of digital cultural resources. And I think it's very important. It's unfortunate that the World Library in English has two hats and two meanings. But our overall vision is, as you've heard, is of giving the user a single, simple, integrated point of access where they will be able to interact in and eventually search in their own language and get back relevant, quality, trusted content and services that bring together, in a way we've not done before, the intellectual and cultural resources that are one of Europe's unique assets. So, I mean, it's relatively simple what we want to do as a goal. Getting there is horrendously complex, and occasionally the more I think about it, it's tempting to wish we hadn't started. I have to say that we also did start on this journey quite a long time ago. Quite a lot of this is not new. We began actually in 1995, 1996 to explore the ideas of creating a common cultural space that could be shared by Europe's archives, libraries, and museums. And it takes time for change to happen. And I think I have to express my thanks in some ways to Google. And giving visibility to the issues of digitizing cultural resources and to the political initiatives that, if they didn't derive from that, actually came up at the same time. So we've been very lucky in seeing a new impetus to the work in this area. I'd like to say also that what we've embarked on in the European Digital Library is an approach or a strategy. It's a framework and it's a process and it's evolutionary. So what you hear described through our projects is very, very much in our minds a first step. And even the 2010 horizon is probably a relatively short-term one. And the vision I've talked about is going to really be effective beyond that. And that means we do need to keep alert, as Jill said in her presentation, to aligning the process that we started with the potential for new opportunities and new services. However, that said, the big challenge is to make it happen. And that's precisely why the Commission has responded to the statements made by the culture ministers and has set some specific targets for things that we expect to see in place at the end of this year, at the end of 2008, a multilingual access, 2010, a space that will integrate not just the content of national libraries, but the content of archives and museums. And this is going to be accompanied by a ramping up of the digitized content that is made available. Clearly, this is going to require a lot of action from the member states and the institutional stakeholders. And as you've heard from the Finnish presidency, the culture ministers, the council, has agreed a set of conclusions with an attached set of actions which do call upon the member states to take up certain activities to solve framework barriers to creating a digital space in respect of copyright, to put in place appropriate policies for digitization, for digital preservation, and for this, to create incentives and funding to help the stakeholders themselves increase the amount of digitized content they can put into this environment. The Commission has also committed to supporting the actions, and we're doing this in a number of ways. The first is perhaps the simplest one. It's through our funding programs, where we have, through competitive calls, we will contribute resources to the stakeholders through projects. The two main programs are the eContent Plus one, which addresses effectively, I think, a set of problems that require the institutions to work with existing content, to adapt current technologies, to reinforce and to work towards a greater level of standardization and interoperability, and to begin to set in place the mechanisms that will give the organizational models and cooperation that is needed to support this over the longer term. The second activity that we have is Framework Programme 7, which has already been mentioned. Mr. Colasanti said yesterday to come up with the money. For 2007-2008, there is a budget of 102 million for research into technology-enhanced learning and into digital libraries and cultural heritage. On the cultural heritage, we are hoping to continue to use research to make progress on a number of fronts. First is how we can actually improve the searchability, the user services, the user participation in digital libraries, and create systems that are scalable and can handle the large volumes that we expect to be put into this environment. But going beyond that, in a sense, is probably what I would call digital library integration, pulling together some of the bits we have already from research and developing new research on top of it. I think there are more issues which I expect to see taken up as the program develops from 2008 onwards, and that is around the technologies that we use for visualizing culture, the systems that allow users to participate, to experience their cultural heritage, and that then stimulate the creativity that the users have in contributing again back to that content. And this reflects also the issues that we heard this morning from the Canadian Heritage Information Network about the social tools, the social environment, the communities of practice, and how the cultural institutions and the cultural sector finds its role in this new emerging landscape. The third strand for our research, which is relevant for here, is digital preservation. And that is the preservation of digital content, irrespective of how it became digital, but with an increasing focus on what we do about what is born digital. Here we think that we have set out two targets. One, to make sure that institutions that are working with digital content today make provision in their systems and their workflows and their business processes for long-term digitization. And this should be taken account of when you start digitizing. The second actually is an invitation to rethink what it means to preserve our societal and community and institutional memories in this digital world. And that may mean radically reviewing the way and the processes and tools we have for doing it. So that's what we have to offer, yeah?
Thank you, Barton, only it was the Vice Minister which just joined us.
Shall I continue? Sure, sure. Okay, I won't be very... another 3 or 4 minutes.
Take your time, take your time.
Right. So that is what we are contributing from the research programme to taking the European Digital Library objectives forward. The second main role, I think, that the Commission plays is in one of coordination. We've heard chaos, which I think is challenging, but I do prefer to anarchy as a description of the world we're working in. And we're taking a number of initiatives. The first is that, following on from the Council conclusions, we have started the process to set up an expert group which will oversee the implementation of the actions and policies in the Member States and also the actions for the Commission that were embedded in these decisions to make sure that they're implemented by everyone. I think our second role, and it's an important one, is to join up the pieces, because we have a lot of projects. We need to help projects create better dialogues between them. I mean, not every project is of the dimensions and of the organizational capacity in bringing together stakeholders that Michael has been able to demonstrate. And we need to create better networks. And I think we need to provide more coordinate the provision of information and monitoring. And I think pooling all these things together across the different stakeholders is probably the most significant challenge. We will work to reinforce where we can strategic cooperation between the archives, the libraries, and the museums community to see that we can all buy in and take ownership of the common vision, and also work on specific technical issues. And I'm thinking particularly here of the challenges posed by interoperability. And this means interoperability to take forward the legacy systems in which you have currently invested, but also to create a framework that can deliver a new platform based on the technical environment that we will see from the internet in 2010, so it's Web 2.0, web services, and so on. And I think this is a major challenge, and it's one of the major keys to making sure that we will really make a combined and joint progress across all these initiatives. So for the moment, I think in terms of the concept of the European Digital Library and where the Commission hopes that